Good afternoon. I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for joining me for the 149th edition of New Mainers Speak. This is a weekly half-hour program where you can hear firsthand about the lives of some of Maine's immigrants. During this show, we visit with individuals regarding their life stories and enduring hopes as New Mainers. Today, my guests are Tony Bazia. He's previously been on the show, sometimes along with his colleague Ann Smith, who is also here in the studio with us today, to talk about their work, leadership efforts, and books that they've written to support adults and children of the South Sudanese diaspora. Welcome back to New Mainers Speak, Tony and Ann.
Hello. Nice to see you, Kate.
Hello. Nice to be here again.
Thanks. It's fun to all be here on this sunny Sunday together. So you two have just returned from a trip to Africa last month, and I'd just love to hear about it. What can you tell us about where you were and what your mission was there?
Well, first of all, I'd just like to say for anybody who's going, if you're flying, which is probably what you'll have to do at some point, boy, it's a long flight. we went from Boston, of course, to London, and then we went from London to Johannesburg, and that was about 9 to 10 hours at least, and there's often a big lag between. I found the whole trip there to be totally exhausting. But then we got to Johannesburg, which is one of the biggest area-wise cities in the world. It sort of sprawls across the area, and in fact, we had to, we took a cab from there, from the airport to our hotel, and you're on pretty high-speed road, 60, 65, and it's 40 minutes from the airport to the hotel. I mean, because you have to drive quite a distance, and we were right in Johannesburg. We went there primarily to connect with different kinds of people. We write books in Project Bazia, and later on we went to a more rural community where they had rural schools. But we wanted to connect with as many South Africans as possible and find out what kind of materials perhaps we could provide, especially in schools, that would be culturally readily understood by the kids. I mean, if you write about skiing in Maine in a book for a reading book for a child in Africa, that's really dumb because you're going to have to explain all of it to them.
Yeah, indeed.
So that was fun. And anyway, we stayed in Johannesburg for 4 days making various contacts. But for me, the most exciting part of the trip was when we went to Malawi. And I'm going to say that real slow so you can Google it if you want. Malawi. It's a tiny, tiny country, South East Africa. Runs long and skinny down the side of a lake. It's not far from Tanzania or Zimbabwe. It is the second poorest country in the world.
To Chad?
I was under the impression Burundi was number one, and then Malawi is two, maybe Chad is third. I don't know. It's really, well, let's say this, the divide between those who have and those who don't have is like the Grand Canyon.
In Malawi.
We got there, and I had never, ever seen, I had never seen a third world country before. So for me as an American, it was really a surprise, much more than I. If somebody had told me, it doesn't make any difference. When you see it, it's entirely different than when somebody tells you or even shows you pictures.
What were you feeling when you saw this really different environment? What did you see and how did it
fall on you? Okay, well, we landed in Lilongwe, which is the capital, and that looks pretty much like your average American city. You know, high-rise hotels, clean streets, lots of security forces around, paved roads, electricity, obviously just very much like here. I mean, the trees and bushes are different. That's about the only difference. And then we got in a taxi, which had been supplied by the people running the rural school. And we drove for maybe 15 or 20 minutes. And suddenly the pavement just stopped. It stopped. There was no more pavement. All the telephone poles stopped. Everything else stopped. It was like suddenly you moved in a time machine to an area long before there were paved roads or plumbing or electricity or anything. And you were driving on this incredibly pothole-ridden red clay road. through the dark, as it happened eventually. And on the sides of the road, and I hope I'm not going to upset my audience here, there were men standing with these big sticks, high tree branches, looked like giant shish kebabs. They had bulging things stuck on them. And I said to our taxi driver, whose name was Gift, I said, "Gift, what are those?" He said, "Oh, they're mice." I said, "What are you talking about?" He said, "They're mice. We eat them." And that was, I guess, the first thing that just sort of hit me, you know, right between the eyes. I mean, I've never been so hungry that I would eat a mouse.
Yeah.
These were not either the house mice that you get. These were the kind of field mice that live in the field.
So, Bazia, when I read your book, Chocolate Boy, that you and Anne wrote together, you telling her about your youth and she documenting that, you lived in a place where there were no roads. With your uncle working in the fields. I wonder if this, how this fell on you, being in such a rural and poor country.
I used to be Sudan, my own village. It was different. It was more organized and more clean, even more than the city. One of the reasons, because it's run by one man in the village. Where I was in Malawi, I was surprised in that small village that is more than maybe 20 chief, that make a confusion.
That's an interesting observation. So yeah, your village was run by one chief?
One chief.
Your dad?
My grandpa.
Oh, your grandpa.
And everything was more organized for fashion of the business and how the discipline and how to think out of the boxes.
Mm-hmm. Too many chiefs. It's like too many cooks spoil the soup.
Right. And one of the reasons when I asked the question in Malawi, because government used to give them money. But for us, chief have to be well without the government give him money. That means he's dependent of himself.
So his people support him.
Yeah. And plus, we're running real estate and farming. So we have it. When you serve, you're serving your people in the way that, but the way I see in Malawi, you became a chief, you get paid. So it's not like really a qualification of love for your people. It's about the money another way. I can put it that way.
The job.
Yeah, it's a job.
It's not an honor.
It's not an honor. For us, it was the honor in the village. And my grandpa was on that because he able. Because in Africa, we believe if you cannot have something for yourself, how are you going to help the other person? That's one of the thing a lot of time now in Africa country became corruption. Because you're giving the position for somebody poor, what are you going to expect? You know, and nobody talk about it. Thank you.
One of the things I asked the taxi driver at one point was we drove over this road eventually many, many times, and I'm telling you that man was the best driver I have ever seen in my life because there were potholes, speed bumps built by the local people with stores to slow you down so you'd buy their stuff, and then goats, chickens, and small children running back and forth. I mean, he was incredible. And I said, give some of these fixes, and I think Bazia brought this up too, the people of this area could smooth out the road. He said, then the chiefs will get mad at them because the government will see that the roads are being improved, but the chief didn't cause the change. So then the chief will be saying, no, don't fix the roads. We want the government to do it. It creates a dependency. Do you see what I'm talking about?
Do.
Rather than an independence.
You two really took your, you took objective eyes to the scene and saw some things you might not see just passing through otherwise.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, that night when we got to the village, I was not prepared for this. We walked into the village, and I got to see something really cool that I hadn't seen for many years. I got to see a sky full of stars. I mean, my vision wasn't, blocked out by ambient light and all that, because there was no ambient light. There were no lights anywhere. And my hostess, who was the principal of the school we were going to, greeted me with a little solar light in her hand because that was all the light she had. She kept three or four of these outside during the day and then brought them in at night. And she showed me where I was staying, which was her house, which was rather like a concrete bunker with no glass or screens over the windows, just blankets, mosquito net room, a room with a little pallet, but it had a mosquito net over it. She showed me the bathroom, which was about, oh, maybe 200 yards from the house through the bush in the dark to a what we would call an outhouse. And all their cooking, all their washing, everything was done outside in the courtyard. I have never seen such poverty. And it wasn't just that there wasn't any electricity or anything. Her furniture was extremely shabby. I'm going to tell you something. When you give something to Goodwill, I'm going to bet that some of what you give is going to end up in Africa. It's a huge market for their used stuff. The little child that her granddaughter had a My Little Pony, a very frazzled-looking My Little Pony, which I'm sure they didn't buy new, but it came somehow, and they bought it for her for Christmas.
Mm.
It was incredible. And the school was the same way. No technology at all. No electricity. But the most dedicated teachers I've ever seen, they dressed up to the nines. I mean, men in suits. I mean, I think how casual my colleagues and I got 10, 15 years ago.
In public schools.
In public schools. But they see themselves as the role models for the future. One other observation that upset me quite a bit, and Mabel pointed this out to me. Mabel was the principal, the woman I stayed with. As you went through different classrooms and the kids got older, the girls, the proportion of girls to boys decreased because, like many African countries in Malawi, the girls are required to do most of the housework to support the family, taking care of the younger kids, doing the washing, and in a bucket, of course, the cooking outside in a steel drum with corn cobs for fuel. I mean, it's just unbelievable. They're very, very astute at figuring out how to do stuff. And the boys just get up in the morning, put their clothes on, and go to school. And yet, there were 40 teachers in that school, and there were only 3 male teachers. I think it was because Mabel prefers to have women as teachers. She thinks for the elementary, this was an elementary school primarily.
So you went to South Africa and then Malawi.
Okay.
Did you go to any other countries in Africa?
We came back to South Africa, but we went to Cape Town. And that was sort of, to be blunt, our vacation part of the trip because we had a mutual friend there. And I got to fly in a helicopter around the Cape.
Oh.
And it was, wow, what a great experience.
Did you feel like Isaac Dennison?
I just felt like my students online on my Facebook friends all kept saying, go, Mrs. Smith, go, because it was great. It was fun.
That's wonderful. And you were making contacts for your books. Is that the point of the trip?
In Malawi, we were talking to the teachers and asking them what they want. In other parts, though, both Malawi and South Africa, and this is where Bazia can kind of step in, I'm sure. He wants to build a network of young professional women from Africa and other countries all over the world because they really need a support group. Because in their country, they're poo-pooed and, told to accept your female role, get married, have kids. And so many of them end up, and then we found this out from the hotel staff, so many of them end up raising a family of children alone. They need that education, and they are the future of Africa.
Hmm. Well, that's interesting. So, Bazia, you have a network of women in Africa. What are you looking to accomplish with them?
The really message of first thing, how to educate the young lady in education, and then the way we're doing it now, we try to change this mentality of the education on the academic. I just feel that's not going to happen in the long term. I'm focused of even if you have education of academic, we change it to mechanic, to electric. It those kind of skill, you have really money. So if the young lady we have economic plan of the education like mechanic or hand job or welding machine, it'd be better. And one of the things I want to change the idea of, she can't do this, she can't do this. I just feel like we're just saying it, but we never give a chance to them. Why not give them a chance? How they can change the world. And I believe the mother who raised the child. The man never raised the child. But when I see the woman, she's educated. It's like I'm educating the whole village. You know, if she want to go to the doctor, if she have the child sick, who's been speaking all the time? Men never speak about the child, how the child feel. So I'm feeling, right now I have close to 23, and I have different skills in college. Some of them graduate. We have lawyer. We have, I think, maybe three lawyer. We have people studying about business, economic. Some of them start in a field of account. Some of them nursing. So all this, I want to connect them in the continent. And one of the reasons when they united among themselves, because Africa is a big country right now, it's 54 countries in Africa. So I'm looking in a general way to make a difference in the continent. I'm looking for 131. If I have with all different skills I'm looking for, so 5 years from now, I'm not going to talk a lot. They will get the picture.
So you're hoping to have a couple representatives in each country,
yeah,
women who are organizing other women to support young women,
yep,
in coming into more education and to more economic, personal power and right, economic,
yeah,
independence.
Yeah, and the other thing, I make it very clear in my own statement to them, I'm not trying to ignore the man, and I'm not trying to be anything concerned politician or religion. I'm not interested. I'm interested just for the woman race of the young lady of Africa. They be left behind for a long time.
And what happens when we leave behind half of a population?
It will affect in the woman race, because right now we have, if I tell them maybe 65, they're not really educated.
Percent.
65% of whom?
Kids, because all this continent in Africa, killing each other.
Oh, you're saying in all of the continent,
right,
of Africa, about 65% of children get an education.
They're not really getting any education. Mm-hmm. They're not getting even good food.
Yeah.
If right now we went there, we're going to start a program for the kids. Maybe we're going to start with a breakfast in Malawi, and it's supposed to be in October. We're working in the process of to have breakfast for those kids when they came to school in the morning. That keep the body to be able to focus, because if the stomach is empty, then I don't believe the student going to be able to listen what the teacher's saying.
You know what I think is quite remarkable about you?
Yes.
Not only are you a man living in the United States and very interested in women's education in rural Africa all over the place, but you're actually doing something about it. I think we often talk with people and say, what the world needs is more X or Y or Z, but you've decided what the world needs more of. You're going very big system, you know, big perspective. And then you get in there and you do it. You make the contacts, you connect with people. I've been with you before when you get phone calls from all over the world, people calling for some kind of encouragement, support.
Yeah, our belief is strong. And one of the beliefs make me more strong for what I believe. I keep saying to anybody who believe, if you believe God, you believe Voodoo, for me, it doesn't matter. But really, yeah, you see God through people. There's nobody in this world going to tell me he's going to see God. And another thing I said, we, like people, when we came to this world, it depends. I was a lucky child to grow in a different life because my dad raised me to be who I am, not to be nobody.
And your dad, who was a tribal chief.
Yeah. So I have a better chance to look at the life. I know a lot of people, even they don't like me, they don't agree with me, they think I'm crazy, but it's still, it's okay. Because I believe one thing, if you talk about me good or bad, I'm still important. If I'm not important, you don't talk about me. I'm straight talk.
All news is good news.
I'm really very important for that, what I say.
So what you believe is that you see God through people.
People.
That's a very clear and distilled pearl right there.
Yeah, and I'm doing it in action. I'm not just saying I believe in God. I'm doing it. And I believe God, he can use anybody to do the right thing. You know?
Great. If you're just joining this conversation, welcome. You are listening to New Mainers Speak. I'm Kate Manahan, and my guests today are Tony Bazia and Ann Smith. They're talking about their organizing work here in Maine and abroad that supports women and education. So let me ask you, did you attend the grand opening of the Greater Portland Immigrant Welcome Center this past Monday? Bazia?
Yeah, I did. It was good. It was it was something good. It was really inspired me personally in a way. There's a place, Africa, they can go and they can get some answer of their own issue. And then the good thing about it, run by a lot of Africa, to make that place happen and then connect to the American who were part of to support, especially the business people who in the level of the New England.
Yeah, so years ago, actually, for listeners, if you've ever heard Damas Rugaba, he came on and talked about his vision for having a one-stop shop welcome center for immigrants, and they've been developing this idea. Shima Kabarigi came on, and she talked about it with me. Ellen Nahimana has also been on this show, and he will return in a few weeks to talk specifically about this center. But this is late-breaking news in Portland, and perhaps really necessary. Our government in the United States and in the state of Maine has offered some challenges recently. Do you want to say anything about that and how this center might help?
It's really, it take them, if I'm right or wrong, I think take them for 3 years. But a couple years ago, even me and Annie Smith were talking about something, how to bring people together, and especially Africa. One other thing I almost said, and I did example on your show a couple years ago, talking about even if we have buses center and we bring all the flag of different countries, they will feel like they're connected. They have to go somewhere to practice them right by feeling comfortable. But sometimes we don't see that sometimes. We see just because, oh, we can do this. I mean, here we have a Catholic, we have different name.
Catholic Charities.
Charity. Mm-hmm. But it's still, they're not really connected the way it is. Maybe.
Do you know what?
Yeah.
It just strikes me that this is exactly what you opened with.
Yeah.
Your community was poor but well organized because it had one strong leader.
Right.
And then you went to Malawi and it wasn't very organized because it has 20 leaders.
Leader.
And so we are organizing immigration in the state.
Right.
And there are so many different organizations. And now with this welcome center, we might just have one strong leader where everyone can meet and get resources met there.
Yeah, and this is the way it's supposed to be, you know, because I know it's kind of the old school, but that's the way it's supposed to be. If you look at the husband and wife, if the husband is there, he will take over. If the husband's not there, the wife will take over. That show you umbrella of how the family run. But if we're going to have 10 people present the same issue, we're going to have different opinion. So we need to have one basket. And from that one basket, pick one person to speak for all basket.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
And this Welcome Center basket offers three major focuses. Foci. they're going to be working toward language support, an English learning lab, allowing people to learn English more quickly, which is something that people have identified as a need. They don't have forever to learn English. An entrepreneurship center where with computers and resources, people helping each other learn how to establish businesses, since immigrants are about 25% more likely to start a business. And a civic engagement hotspot, helping people find a path to citizenship. So 24 Preble Street, I think they're open regular business hours. You can certainly find them online.
Third floor
on 24 Preble Street in Portland, Maine.
When you go in, third floor.
That's good. It's called the Greater Portland Immigrant Welcome Center. Very findable on Facebook. So are you still working at Portland High School, or tell us a little bit about what you're doing with Project Bazia locally and how we can contact you if we need to.
We're still working with the kids. We're just doing the same what we're doing. And right now with the new place, we're going to have better chance because even it's not far away from the school. We still connect with the student, but only we're going to wait after this vacation. We're going to put different idea. We already have a lot of good idea, especially when we went to this trip. We're coming out with different thing. And then plus we have Africa United. Africa United even covers 60 states in New England.
What's the mission of Africa United?
The way we put it with my boss, Muhammad, is about how to educate them by the same people who've been here before, like me, maybe Muhammad, and how we pay back for the community.
So you're looking at establishing a national organization called Africa United, which basically does what the... New England region.
Yeah, it's already established 513C and everything.
Okay, so you have This Welcome Center is such a good idea for Portland, and you're basically doing the same thing for New England through Africa United.
Right. We can bring the people together because one of the things, network is for me is my big goal. I'm good on it.
You're kind of born to network.
Yeah, network. Because, and one of the things make me succeed in the network, I raise the value of everybody. That's a very important to earn that respect. Do not point finger for people. Do not judge people by what they look like. There's nobody choose to be white or black or Latino. It's the human race. Everybody's important. But if we're going to start pointing finger, that's what the issue. And today the big problem in society, we became negative more than positive. Nobody support anything good no more. They support only thing bad. And that's lose their face of respect. And our belief is strong, whatever you do, you need to respect yourself and respect other. Everybody can bring something on the table until we accept each other like a human race.
And you really, you walk the talk. Here you are, this international feminist, and you might not guess that just at a glance.
I really believe it's strong for that. And then plus, whatever I'm doing, if it's in the radio show, TV, our Facebook, I believe I change a lot of people's life, and especially ladies. You know, because when I see a man who don't respect women the way it is, sometimes it bothers me. Because your mom was a woman, and still you're going to have somebody. But when I see the man who divide him woman from mother in a different way and abuse him girl because that's not his mom, I just feel bad.
I couldn't have said it better myself.
Yeah,
I cannot figure out how people forget that they came from a mom.
Yeah, and it doesn't make sense. For me, since I'm born, I never used any bad word to the woman. If I see somebody encouraging the woman, I just feel there's no respect.
Well, thank you, Bazia. You are so kind to come back on this show. I so admire the dedication you show to serving the global community of South Sudanese people and Africans. And I can see that you learned a lot from your father, the Luo tribal chief, as a boy. And now you share that sense of leadership and networking with the world. And Anne, so glad to have you back in the studio with us today. You're a powerful partner. And you get it all written down and recorded and collaborated. And it's beautiful what you two are doing for Portland, for New England, and Africa. So keep up the fabulous work. Thank you all for listening. Please join us each week for similar interviews with diverse members of our community. If you would like to hear this complete interview or interviews from previous weeks, please visit newmainerspeak.com and check out more related information at facebook.com/newmainerspeak. New Mainers Speak is rebroadcast on Mondays at 4:30 p.m. on WERU-FM in Blue Hill and Bangor area. I'm Kate Manahan, closing today's program with a song that Tony and Anne suggested for us as we wrap things up. Do you want to say a word about the music you were hearing?
One night when we were in South Africa, actually when we were in Cape Town, we got to go out one night to a nightclub. And this is the kind of music you're going to hear in most nightclubs in Cape Town. And if you ever want an absolutely fantastic vacation, I cannot recommend very many places more. It is so beautiful and ethnically diverse. Really a wonderful place to go. Thank you, Kate.
You're welcome. It's called Awesome Xylophone Quartet.